Our first lesson is from the Gospel according to Mark. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you impure spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on a nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs. Allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the impure spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. And from Paul's letter to the church in Corinth, "But he said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me.'" And this is the word of the Lord.
I believe that grace is the most powerful force in the universe. There are a lot of forces in the universe, though, aren't there? Lots and lots of them, some of them pulling huge heavenly bodies together, some of them holding our subatomic particles together. These are very, very strong forces. Yet I believe that grace is the most powerful force in all of the universe. I think I am a good follower of John Wesley when I say that. John Wesley, you remember, is the founder of our Methodist movement, and he is all about grace. When you read his works, they are just infused with grace. And he talks about it as if we can do nothing apart from grace. Every step we take toward God is only able to happen because of God's grace residing in us. Everything that we are able to do that is good in this world, we are able to do because God's grace is making that possible. Now, it's not some puppet kind of thing where God has strings attached to us and we are just doing God's bidding. No, John Wesley is very clear that we have free will, that we get to make choices. We get to say yes or no to God. We get to say yes or no or choose this or that in our lives. Yet still he says that everything that we do for good in this world, every step that we take closer to God, is only possible by God's grace. God's grace is the most powerful force in the universe. It's what brought us here today. It's what enables every response that we have to God in this moment and throughout our lives. It is the most powerful force in the universe. This is the third of 4 weeks that we're talking about grace here at Trinity, following along with that congregational reading book by Max Lucado, Shaped by Grace. I hope that you're reading it. I hope that over these weeks you are coming to understand grace in a profound and perhaps new way among us. Grace is, if I had to sum it up in my most succinct way, I would say that grace is the undeserved, unmerited, free gift of God's love for us. The words grace and gift come from the same root word. Grace is a gift given to us. Now, for some of us, it's easier to let in that grace that God gives to us. It's easy for us to sort of absorb it and let it in. But my guess is that for many of us, It's harder because we are shaped by this idea that we have to earn everything we get, including God's love. So a lot of us, many of us, don't quite feel worthy of God's love, at least in some moment in our lives. So it's hard to really let in that gift of God's grace, the undeserved part especially. But God's grace is there before we know we want it, before we know we need it. It's there before we're aware of it. It is always there. In fact, there's nothing we can do to get rid of it. We can keep trying to push it away, and we can say no to it. We can decide we don't really want it, but that doesn't really make it go away because we're not the most powerful force in the universe. Grace is the most powerful force in the universe. Now, it doesn't shove us over or make us do things. Again, we have to work with grace to make it possible. But grace is the most powerful force in the universe. And today, we have this incredible story from the book of Mark, which is the story of grace getting into a boat, crossing boundaries, coming to a person who is half dead, half alive, out of his mind, and restoring him to health and healing and wholeness. This is an incredible, beautiful story of grace. See, grace is most fully known to us humans and in the person and life and ministry, death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. That is the purest embodiment of God's grace, right there in this one that we know as Jesus Christ. And in the story, we find Jesus and the disciples just coming to this place, the land of the Gerasenes. Now, they had had a really rough night the night before. This was the story where Jesus calmed the storm. They had gotten into this boat, and they were headed across the Sea of Galilee. And the storm came up, and the disciples thought that Jesus was just not caring one bit, at least not on duty. And the storm came up, and Jesus ended up quieting it and quieting the disciples and saying, "It's okay, we're going to be just fine." I imagine that the disciples, when they realized where they were at the end of this night, thought that that storm had blown everything a little off course. Because in Scripture, when it says that they went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, that's kind of code for saying they're not in the Jewish territory anymore. They went from home, their home base, to this place called the Decapolis, the home of the Gerasenes. And this was a place that no good, upstanding Jewish person would go on their own. So I imagine the disciples going, "Oh, where are we? How did we get here?" As they get off the boat, I'm sure they're wondering if they should really get off the boat too, and if they're stepping in places that they should step, and not quite sure if they want to talk to the people that they're about to come across. It was a place of uncleanness, and there's lots of uncleanness in this story. For the first person that they run across is this man who had been living amongst the tombs. That's another place that if you were a good Jewish person, you wouldn't go. You don't go hang out in a cemetery if you're a Jewish person, because dead things are unclean. So this man had been living amongst the tombs. Maybe he wasn't sure anymore if he was dead or alive. Maybe the community from which he came wasn't sure if he was dead or alive either, for they seemed to be very afraid of this man, so much so that they had shackled him into the tombs, shackled him there. But those shackles didn't hold him either. He was out of his mind. He was overwhelmed by some force that was certainly greater than he was, something that had taken away his life, his ability to live with other people, his ability to care for himself, to keep himself clean and healthy. This force that was within him was huge, and it was destroying him. Our scripture says that he would cut himself with rocks there in the cemetery among the tombs. In other versions of the story, it says that he would bang himself with rocks, bruising his head and his body. Maybe he was trying to free himself from whatever it was that had taken him captive. Maybe he was just trying to find a sense of life again. Maybe this force that had overwhelmed him was destroying him, and he could not stop it. He was unable to know who he was anymore. He had found his way somehow to Jesus, fell down at his feet, but when Jesus engaged him in conversation, he could only be engaged with whatever it was that had taken hold of him. And when he asked his name, do you remember what he said? He said, "My name is Legion." A legion is 6,000 Roman soldiers. Whatever it was that had taken him captive was huge and forceful and powerful and too much for this man to take on himself. He was overwhelmed by it. And he had lost his sense of self. He didn't know who he was any longer. This other thing had taken hold so much that that's all he knew he was anymore. Half dead, half living among the tombs, this awful, dirty place, half naked, out of his mind, unable to cope with life anymore. And here comes grace. Grace in a place where he had no business being, among the tombs, among this half-dead, half-living soul. Grace comes and is the most powerful force in the universe and sets him free. Sets him free of this thing that had held him captive for so long. Restores him to himself. Restores him to his right mind, restores him to the one who he was created to be. Now, this man was in an extreme situation. I hope that none of us find ourselves in such a place as he is. But perhaps there have been things in our lives, perhaps in the past, perhaps right now, perhaps in the life of somebody that you know, that mirrors it to some degree or another. There are lots of voices in our world that try to tell us who we are, aren't there? Lots of things trying to tell us that we would be better if X, Y, Z, or we should do this, or we be more what the world wants us to be if we behaved this way or said this thing or looked this way or had this. There are lots of voices trying to shape us and move us from one place or another. Lots of things in our lives pulling on us, trying to move us one way or another. Sometimes the things of our lives just sort of overwhelm us in such a way that we forget who we are. Do you ever have a moment in your life where you go, "Who am I? Why am I acting like this? Why am I saying this? It's not me. It's not who God created me to be. It's not who I like. It's not who I am." Who am I? We can have these crises of identity at times in our lives. Yet grace is the most powerful force in the universe and helps to restore us in those moments. Maybe there are things in your life which are shackling you, overwhelming you, keeping you bound in ways that are not unlike this man that we encounter amongst the tombs. Could be many things. Maybe there's a situation in your life that makes you not sure if you are going to get through today. Or you're not sure how the answer is going to come to solve this problem that helps you get through tomorrow or next week or next year. Sometimes there are things in our lives that just overwhelm us emotionally or spiritually or just circumstantially. Things that hold us and we're not sure how we're going to get through. Maybe they are things like an overwhelming amount of bills. Or maybe there are addictions that hold us captive. Maybe there are fears that we have and we are so scared, just like lions. And those things that Pastor Frank was talking about with the children, but maybe it's the grown-up versions of those things. Maybe there are bitternesses or angers or resentments that hold us captive, that keep us trapped in the place that we are and don't let us be free to sing and to dance and to sing God's praises. Maybe you are certain today that you have done something or said something or acted in some way that is unforgivable. You don't see how God or this other person could possibly forgive you for what you have done, or perhaps you're feeling that way towards somebody else. How can you forgive this person who's hurt you so, so badly? Yet grace is the most powerful force in the universe, and it has the power to get into all those places and to set us free. When Martin Luther, the father of the Protestant Reformation, felt oppressed by the devil, he said that what he would do is he would get up and he would shout, "I am baptized." Now, that's probably not the first thought on our minds when we feel overwhelmed, right? But I think it's a good thing to practice, right? Because, see, Martin Luther knew that it is in our baptism that we know grace most abundantly. And it is in our baptism that we know ourselves to be sons and daughters, the beloved ones of God. I know that in our baptism, sometimes we focus a lot on that part of baptism that is about our public proclamation of faith. But there's a whole other part that comes before that. In fact, that this public proclamation of faith can't happen without. Remember that all of our responses to God are only possible by grace. So in our baptism, the real work of baptism, the primary first work of baptism, is that God is imparting grace to us, pouring out God's undeserved, unmerited, free gift of grace upon us. In fact, that's one reason that we baptize infants in the United Methodist Church. Those infants can't proclaim their faith in Jesus Christ, can they? We baptize infants because they come without the ability to have earned anything. Without the ability to prove anything in this world yet, they come just as they are. That's true when we come as adults for baptism too, or teenagers, or whatever age it is, but we kind of forget that sometimes because we as grown-up people think that we have the ability to earn God's grace. Or that public proclamation of faith is what makes us deserve to be baptized. But it's really just a pure gift of God's grace for us. And in that moment of baptism is one of the purest moments that that grace is poured out upon us. And in that moment, we are called God's daughters, God's sons, God's beloved. God calls us by name and claims us as his own. That is grace. And so when Martin Luther shouts out, "I am baptized," when he's feeling oppressed and shackled up and bound up, he is claiming again that grace is the most powerful force in the universe and that nothing, nothing is stronger than God's claim on us and God's ability to surround us and hold us in those moments. Can you feel that grace today? Can you feel that claim that God has on your life? There's more to this story. There are several verses that come after it, and I think they're very important for us because they're all about people's responses to this incredible act of grace on this man's life. This man was part of a community once upon a time. And, of course, it was not a Jewish community. It was not a community that knew God or knew Jesus, of course. And so some of their reaction isn't completely surprising. But when they saw that this man was restored to health and wholeness, theirs was not an overwhelming praise God, hallelujah. That's not what they did at all. In fact, they were terrified by it. They didn't understand it. They didn't understand this powerful force that could bring something so half gone, half dead, where there was no hope left for it. They couldn't understand how it could have been made whole again. And it was terrifying. They weren't sure what it meant for them. They weren't sure what it meant for their community. And on top of that, Jesus had thrown that force that was overwhelming this man into a herd of swine and tossed it over the cliff into the sea. Now, for Jewish people, pigs are unclean, and another thing you don't want to be anywhere near if you're a good Jewish person. But for them, somebody owned that herd of swine, and somebody probably suffered some pretty significant financial loss because that swine went off the edge of the cliff. I don't know how much of that played into it, but I'm guessing at least a couple of people were upset by that. So not only were they afraid, they also were angry. And they invited Jesus and his disciples to move on along. Go on home. We don't really want you here anymore. So the disciples and Jesus were getting into the boat, but the man who had been restored, the man who had been healed, he came to them and said, "Please, please let me come with you. You have restored me to life. You have restored me to the person that I once was. You have broken my chains, and I want to come with you and be your disciple and be with you." But Jesus told him no. Jesus said, "I need you to stay here." I wonder if Jesus knew, knowing that grace is the most powerful force in the universe, that this community who was trapped in their own fear and anger and uncertainty about this whole thing needed this man and this grace. They needed him because now he had had this experience of grace in such a way that he embodied it too. He becomes the first missionary to the Gentiles in the book of Mark. He is now there, a living testimony to what God's grace can do, to the ways that grace is the most powerful force in the universe. Perhaps Jesus knew that if this man could be restored to healing, to wholeness by God's grace, then this community had hope for it too. But he needed to leave some grace there. So he left this man and all of his faithful responses to be there for this community. See, healing and wholeness is not just about being restored in body and mind and soul. It's also about being restored to a community of people. Part of his healing was to become part of this community once again and for them all to figure out how to live together with God's grace there among them. What are your responses to God's grace in your life? How do you respond to God's grace? How have you done it? But even more importantly, how will you do it from here on out? There's one other thing that I want to say about grace, and that is that grace can work in many different ways in our lives. Sometimes it works as an all of a sudden sort of thing. But I think most of the time it's not that Superman swoop in and save the day kind of thing. Sometimes it is. But you know how in all those Superman movies and TV shows and comic books, he hears that cry of the kid falling over the waterfall, and he just swoops in and picks him up and sets him down and all is okay? Sometimes grace works like that. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it comes upon us all of a sudden and truly saves our lives in a moment. But most of the time, I think that grace is a whole lot more subtle than that. That grace is this force that works on us and around us and through us and chips away at our hard hearts and the armor of our souls and those places that are so dark and thickly protected and guarded and bolstered away. Much more like the Colorado River carving the Grand Canyon over thousands of years. Grace works on us in ways that are sometimes really hard to detect. But because grace is the most powerful force in the universe, even greater than that Colorado River carving that Grand Canyon, it can go into places that we have given up on. Places in our own hearts and souls, places in this world, places and people that we think are beyond hope. God can get there. God's grace can infiltrate the darkest, deepest crevices, the thickest, most shut off people. God can infiltrate any bit of it. That is a hopeful, hopeful thing, isn't it? And sometimes God even asks us, who have experienced grace, who know ourselves to be baptized, who know ourselves as daughters and sons of God, to go and share that grace with others. To be the ones that embody grace patiently, boldly, wildly, ready to offer it even in the midst of the darkest, darkest places, even going places that we're not sure we belong. But grace crosses boundaries. Grace goes places that you would never expect grace to go. Can you feel that grace in your life today? What will your response be to it? This morning we are welcoming new members into our family of Trinity Church, and we get to remember our baptism once again, because joining the church is a renewal of our baptism, of that baptism covenant. So we get to hear once again today that we are God's beloved. We get to say once again, I am baptized, and claim that for ourselves. And then we get to respond with all of the joy of our heart today in this space, but also wherever we are sent, wherever we go from this place, we get to respond to that grace. Going where God sends us, offering that grace to those who we encounter. How will you respond to God's grace in your life today?